Good morning. I'm Commissioner John McCarthy, Port of Tacoma President, calling to order a regular meeting of the Port of Tacoma Commission on August the 19th, 2025. The time is now 10:07 a.m. Also present today are Commissioners Kristen Ang, Deanna Keller, Dick Marzano, and Don Meyer. We have a quorum. Our meeting is being held at the Fabulous Center and streamed live on the meeting page of the Port of Tacoma's website at www.portoftacoma.com. The Commission will now meet in executive session until noon to discuss one minimum price of lease item and three potential litigation items. Those discussions are allowed under the Revised Code of Washington, Chapter 42.30.110. Okay, good afternoon. I'm Port of Tacoma Commission President John McCarthy. The time is now 12:01. The commission met in executive session from 10:07 a.m. this morning until 11:30 to discuss one minimum price of lease item and three potential litigation items. Both of those discussions are allowed under Revised Code of Washington, Chapter 42, Section 30.110. At this time, let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, good afternoon. We do acknowledge that we are on the traditional homelands of the Puyallup tribe. The Puyallup people have lived on and stewarded these lands and continue to do so today. We consider the tribe to be our partners in many of the efforts that we undertake. First item on the agenda is to approve today's agenda. Is there anyone who would like to make a change to our posted agenda? Seeing no objection, the agenda stands as has been published. The next item on the agenda is the Executive Director's Report. Eric Johnson, our Executive Director.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the record, Eric Johnson, Executive Director, Port of Tacoma. For those of you who are remarking or noting my appearance, I will just remind you, I tell people being a port director can be a dangerous job. The news that I've got right now is a couple things and a couple brief announcements. The port is sponsoring the NAACP Freedom Awards this Thursday at the Convention Center, and I believe several of you and some staffers will be attending that. Another piece of good news, really, this year, because the boat tours have been so popular in the past, we increased the size of our vessel significantly, and we still sold out all of our tickets within 90 minutes. I say sell out, we don't charge for them, we just ask people to reserve them. But we've already started a waiting list, so if you wanted to get tickets and you didn't, I would encourage you to get on the waiting list, and you may be able to get on yet. And those tours, by the way, are Sunday, September 7th. Most of the day, leaving from down at the Seaport Museum. Next item relates to the Tide Flat Subarea Plan. The Tacoma City Council had a study session last week to go over the Subarea Plan, and that went well. The next step is for the Commission to meet as a committee of the whole to consider potential amendments to the plan. We have communicated to the city that we prefer that the plan be adopted in the form that all five governments approved it last fall. Or earlier, that was a strong piece of work with a unanimous five government vote, and we believe that that should be respected by the city, so that's our position. And then finally, turning to another piece of good news, kind of a milestone, really. The Department of Ecology recently approved our interim cleanup action plan for the Arkema property, the contaminated property along the Hylobos, between Taylor Way and the Hylobos. You got a briefing on that and the proposal that we were going to make. We did, in fact, stick to that proposal. What Ecology saw was what you saw. And Ecology approved that recently, which is a big milestone. That site has been, you know, we've been working on getting a cleanup plan for that for a very, very, very long time. And I'm pleased to report that we're making progress there. So that's really good news on the environmental front. And that is the end of my report.
All right. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is item 4, public comment. We will now invite public comment. As a reminder, comment time is limited to 3 minutes per person. Pursuant to statute, recorded public comments and public meeting sign-in sheets, including names and any contact information provided, or subject to public disclosure. So we'll proceed in the first in the order of the sign-up sheet. And I see Danielle Foss has signed up. Good afternoon. Please, the sign-in would indicate that you are from ERM, and I think your general topic that you mentioned on the sign-in sheet was PQ authorization. Please, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Danielle Foss. I am an employee of ERM, the environmental consultant to PQ LLC, in connection with the proposed cleanup site on the former PQ site on Taylor Way. PQ's senior leadership team is based on the East Coast and was unable to attend today's meeting in person, but they've asked that I present the following to the Commission on their behalf. PQ has become aware that the Commission has on the agenda today for the authorization of $1,275,000 in anticipation of proposed litigation against PQ. PQ filed a public comment with the Commission via its email yesterday, but wanted to reiterate for the record that it is surprised and disappointed by this aggressive and premature action. PQ wants to make it clear to the Commission that it has no intention of walking away from its obligations under the purchase and sale agreement entered into between the Port of Tacoma and PQ in 2008. To the contrary, PQ has spent in excess of $725,000 working collaboratively pursuant to an interim cost-sharing agreement with the Port in an effort to reach a mutually agreed-upon cleanup plan. While the parties were unable to reach agreement on such a plan, and the Port has chosen to proceed on its own without PQ's input, it does not mean that PQ will not contribute its fair share of cleanup costs as required by the purchase agreement. To be clear, the purchase and sale agreement acknowledges that the site, along with the surrounding properties, was contaminated at the time the property was purchased by the Port. The sale agreement further stated the express intent that the parties that PQ only be responsible for costs associated with PQ activities at the site, and that the Port would be responsible for all other contamination. In other words, it has always been contemplated that there be an allocation of cleanup costs. In addition, PQ believes that the speed and scope of the Port's interim action far exceed what PQ is responsible for under the purchase agreement, in that it is designed to accommodate the rapid development of the property, what we understand to be known as Project Neptune. It is PQ's position that nothing under the purchase agreement obligates PQ to pay for redevelopment costs or incremental costs associated with the aggressive development schedule. Rather than engage in cost of litigation, PQ has offered to have its CEO meet directly with the Commission to discuss a fair and equitable resolution of this dispute, and we are hopeful that the Commission will agree that such an approach is more desirable than litigation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And I do want to acknowledge that we did receive an email yesterday from Jenny Hu, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, from PQ. And that email has been disseminated to each of the commissioners today, so we all have a copy of that email. So, and that's relating, of course, to the environmental cleanup of property located at 1114 and 1202 Taylor Way in the city of Tacoma. So thank you.
Thank you.
That's the last name on the sign-up sheet. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to make a statement? Okay, seeing no one rushing to the podium there, we will conclude the public comment portion of the meeting. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Items on the consent agenda are considered routine and taken up by one motion and vote unless any commissioner requests an item be removed for individual consideration. The consent agenda today consists of approval of the minutes of July 15th, 2025, and July 17th, 2025. B, disbursement certifications during the period of July 4th, 2025 to August 11th, 2025. Check numbers 2877 to 3188 in the amount of $10,712,325.52, as well as electronic payments in the amount of $15,156,624.11 for a total amount of $25,868,949.63. The consent agenda also consists of item C, which is the PQ authorization increase for litigation support, which has been mentioned in public comment. And the consent agenda also consists of item D, approving the second amendment to the 2020 interlocal agreement between the Port of Tacoma and the City of Tacoma. Are there any requests to remove items from the consent agenda? Seeing none, the consent agenda stands as has been identified without objection. I will take a motion on that, though. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Meyer, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Any questions, comments, or amendments to the consent agenda? Commissioner Meyer.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner McCarthy, one question I have on the check register. The property insurance renewal, which has always been an item that I'm always keenly aware of, we've got a check here for $2 million, a little over $2 million, another one for property insurance renewal and commercial cyber liability of about $34,000. How does that compare to what the previous policies were in terms of cost? Because I'm, you know, with that kind of an expenditure, I think we need to be vitally aware of what's happening in the insurance world.
I would have to get back to you on that. My general memory is that they've gone, it's gone down, actually.
That's what I thought, too.
Sarah Kern, our risk manager, has done a very good job of working with our brokers to negotiate those contracts. I know that our cyber insurance has gone down as a direct result of our efforts to improve our cybersecurity. And I believe our property and casualty went down too, Aaron. The exact amount, though, I don't have in the top of my head, but I can certainly provide it.
But the amounts don't reflect necessarily diminished coverage. It's just
no. We don't diminish the coverage. This is the premiums for existing or better coverage.
Okay, I would be very interested in that.
Yeah, no, we wouldn't decrease the coverage without you guys knowing about it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Any additional questions or comments as to the consent agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the consent agenda, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposition? Please say no. The consent agenda is adopted unanimously. The next item on the agenda is item number six, which is commission action. This is the business section of the meeting where items are brought forth by commissioners or staff that require a commission vote. The first item is real estate management system project approval.
Good afternoon, commissioners. We're here this afternoon for a real estate management system project approval. My name is Martin Adamson. I'm the senior manager of enterprise applications, and I'm joined today by Debbie Shepak, who's the senior director of real estate for Port of Tacoma. Jim Vole, who is the Senior Director of Real Estate for the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and Mark Moore, who is the Senior Manager of IT Project Management and who is also the Project Manager for this project.
The action we're requesting today is project authorization of $585,000 plus Washington State sales tax for project 101719.01. to replace the Yardi real estate management system currently used by the port and NWSA with a Microsoft Dynamics 365 real estate management system, and authorization to execute a sole source personal services agreement with Crow LLP for $548,000 plus Washington State sales tax to provide services required for the project.
The Port of Tacoma and the Northwest Seaport Alliance are looking for a better way to optimize the lease management and billing system. Currently, the Port of Tacoma manages approximately 100 leases with an annual revenue of $44 million. The NWSA manages approximately 200 leases with an annual revenue of $270 million. Both real estate and finance departments are currently utilizing Yardi to manage their lease and billing functions. However, Yardi currently presents some clear challenges as well as being a costly system to maintain at approximately $71,000 per year. Those challenges to Yardi are as follows. Yardi does not comply with current GASB 87 standards requiring finance to adjust reports to make them compliant. Secondly, the Port and the Alliance are using two separate Yardi accounts. This is necessary based on separate lines of business, which requires extra staff time and input. And lastly, Yardi is not fully integrated with our current D365 financial system and requires extensive reconciliation reports continuously. As a result, the Port and NWSA are seeking a modern and integrated real estate management system that will utilize one system for billing and reporting.
Starting late last year and in continuing to May of this year, the Port Real Estate, NWSA Real Estate, Finance, and IT departments performed a thorough assessment where we identified over 70 real estate-related processes that are performed by staff today using existing systems as well as performed manually using spreadsheets. These existing processes form the basis of our business scenarios that are the requirements for our new solution. We then work with our D365 partner, Crow, to have them demonstrate how D365 can be used to perform many of our business scenarios using existing D365 real estate capabilities. We also work with Crow to understand where enhancements will be required to accomplish the remainder of our business scenarios. This information was used to develop the costs and timeline for this project.
Commissioners, we believe there are several benefits that the Port will realize by using a real estate management system within Dynamics 365. And so firstly, we're leveraging our current investments, prior investments in our enterprise resource planning, which is Microsoft Dynamics 365. And then we're expanding its use into additional business areas for the Port and NWSA. Secondly, as Debbie mentioned, we have additional work that we perform today around GASB 87, which is the Government Accounting Standard Board standard for lease accounting. And this Dynamics 365 solution will be compliant with that standard. There will be more aligned workflows across the Port and NWSA as both real estate teams will be using the same system and processes. And then also importantly, we're taking the opportunity here through this project to standardize on a consistent naming format for our real estate assets, which hopefully reduces confusion. And then finally, there will be improved data and reporting capabilities for real estate management. As you saw at the beginning of this presentation, we're seeking authorization to execute a sole source agreement with Crow LLP, and I wanted to explain why we're recommending this approach. Crow were competitively selected through an RFP in 2023, and they have been our partner through the initial Dynamics 365 implementation project. The original RFP and the contract with Crow were for a defined scope, primarily focused on our finance areas and our procurement areas, that scope didn't include real estate as a component. As we expand the use of Dynamics 365 into other areas of the Port business, such as real estate, we firmly believe that continuing to utilize Crow to provide the services required is in the best interest of the Port and for the reasons stated on this slide.
Pending commission authorization today, we'll begin a project next month and be ready for testing a new solution by early next year and target going live with a new solution in Q2 of next year. For the project costs, they're made up of one-time costs and also the first year of the annual recurring costs. Most of the one-time costs are with Crow for services required to develop enhancements, create documentation, facilitate testing, and deliver training to staff. This is estimated at $454,000. There are also one-time costs of $17,000 for our GIS vendor, GTG, to assist with integrating the new solution with our Esri geographic information system. We've included 15% contingency on the one-time services for the project, which is typical for an average risk IT project. The first year of annual recurring costs are also included in the project costs, and these are $16,000 for some additional Microsoft D365 finance license, which are required, and some of the real estate staff don't already have that license, so we include some additional licenses. And then $25,000 for the Crow solution for lease management subscription, which provides some of the additional real estate functionality and capabilities we need for this solution. It's important to point out that our annual recurring costs for the new solution are $41,000, which is a savings of $31,000 over the compared to what we currently pay for the existing system, Yardi. And the 2025 and 2026 CIP budget includes the $585,000 needed for this project. Again, these are the actions we're requesting, summarizing project authorization for $585,000 plus tax for the project, and sole source contract authorization of $548,000 plus tax with Crow, who would perform most of the services for the project. And now we're happy to take any questions that you have.
All right. So first, we'll put it on the table by way of a motion to undertake two actions. The first is project authorization in the amount of $585,000 plus tax for project 101719 to replace the Yardi real estate management system, which is currently used by the Port of Tacoma and the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and to replace it with a Microsoft Dynamics 365 real estate management system. Second part of the motion would be to authorize to execute a sole source personal service contract with Crow LLP for $548,000 plus tax to provide the services necessary for the project. Is there a motion to approve these two action items?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Marzano, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Questions, comments, or amendments? Commissioner Marzano?
Yeah, thank you. I'll support this. I don't think we all like the idea of going through a sole source contract, but I understand, Mark, when you explained it, that we've had dealings with this company before, and it makes more of a fluid operation with regards to moving this forward. The cost I'm looking at, the $41,000, that's going to be ongoing. And at the same time, are we signing a long-term contract or just?
The services agreement for the real estate subscription is a five-year agreement.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Meyer.
Yes, thank you. I have a couple questions on the sole source contract. Where in one of your slides you talk about the fact that it can be expanded, the 365 can be expanded to support many other business departments. The real estate system is the first area of expansion. One of the things that I've always felt strongly about is integration of real estate, the pricing and the supports associated with that, with the creation of a cost center kind of a concept where you have maintenance costs that are accumulated so that you as a director of perhaps a real estate would be able to look at it and say, well, here's my cost center and here's the result of that. So first of all, what do you mean by the first area of expansion? I'd like to understand that better, because maintenance of our facilities are really key to me. And I want to make certain not only do we have adequate staff for our maintenance department, but also we got the ability to track what's actually happening to facilities, because we've done a really good job of, I think, preserving facilities beyond their useful life. And I won't go beyond that. And I'm thinking of Early Business Center. I think Commissioner Marzano knows exactly what I'm talking about. But So talk to us a little bit about that question.
Let me take that. Thank you. Great question. So today, a lot of that happens because our accounting team take the data from various systems and create the financial reporting that's required. So moving forward, because the real estate data will be in the same system as our accounting system, it will be easier for those types of reports to be generated. And as I said, the real estate is the first system that we're looking to add into Dynamics 365, but we do intend to look at our maintenance system in a year or two's time. A large part of the work that's handled there are the work orders that are used to maintain some of our real estate assets. So we will have increasing visibility into that in coming years, because all that data will be in the same system.
Fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Last question I have is a little bit of what Commissioner Marzano alluded to. Sole source is really, that's something we don't, as commissioner, I don't like to see very often. Perhaps it is justified, but I can't understand the comment that you have here where it says the services provided by GRO will utilize a pricing structure from the RFP selection. Can you explain that to me?
Sure.
I don't quite understand. I thought we were doing a sole source.
Another good question. We did an RFP and selected GRO back in 2023 for the initial implementation of Dynamics 365, and there was a pricing structure associated with that contract, and we're using that same pricing structure for this additional contract with GRO. So the reason that we're doing a sole source is because the specific body of work, the real estate project, wasn't included in that original scope of work.
Okay.
So same vendor, we did competitively select them, but because this particular scope is different and wasn't included, we're doing this as a sole source.
So that's when you had the competitive pricing?
Correct.
That you could, okay.
Correct, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Additional questions, comments? Commissioner Ryan.
I guess also, I did have concerns about sole source as well, and I was wondering, in your history with working with GRO, has there been any issues that you've had to resolve and come together when you did find them?
So these projects are hard. Implementing the original Dynamics 365 project was hard, but we've got a great relationship with GRO. They treat us extremely well. They're a top-tier Microsoft partner for implementing Dynamics 365, and they have a very skilled workforce who have a lot of experience now with the port's particular lines of business and processes. So I think in any relationship, there's always management-level discussions to make sure things are running smoothly, and we've certainly had those conversations with the GRO leadership on an ongoing basis. But there hasn't been any issues from that perspective that would give me pause to continue working with GRO.
I guess further with that, since sole source, how did you come up with the price? I was just curious.
Yeah, so I'll take that one. So we conducted, starting late last year, we got all the departments together that do real estate related work processes. We documented over 70 processes, like who does the work, what is the steps that are used for that process. Things like billing, things like getting reminders sent for when insurance is about to expire, all kinds of processes. We diagram those in see how they flow together. And then we then work to understand, okay, what do we do today and what do we need in the future based on these processes? And then we took those processes and we worked with GRO they helped us with the assessment to understand what, so there's some real estate functionality in D365 that we already own today, part of the financial D365. And some of our business scenarios or requirements were met with out-of-the-box D365 functionality. Some are not. There are unique ways we do business. Some of the GASB 87 reporting is going to require some customization for the port. So then we work with to understand what changes would be needed for those things, the additional enhancements to D365 to make it meet our needs. And then that's what we use to come up with the pricing.
So you worked with them, just them, to come up with this price?
Correct.
Okay.
And ourselves. We gathered our own requirements.
Commissioner Marzano.
Yeah, just one quick question. You don't have to answer it right now if you don't know, but I know that we have a service agreement with Northwest Seaport Alliance with regards to this. I was just wondering what kind of cost that they incur and that they reimburse us for?
Yes, so this is all, this project is handled like the majority of IT expenses. The Port of Tacoma pays for the project, and then through the service agreement, the Northwest Seaport Alliance reimburses the port, that might not be the right word, 62%, 62.4% the costs of IT.
Thank you.
You know, the sole source contract aspect of this, it's that coupled with the fact that your startup costs are just an estimate is bothersome to me, because we're kind of locking ourselves into one entity, sole source, and then I don't like to see it. I've seen it in the past where we do a sole source, and guess what? Because it was an estimate, it ends up costing us more than you anticipated. So I'm hoping that the estimate's at the high end of what it ends up with. You feel pretty confident in that?
I'm pretty confident. It's a milestone-based agreement where we're invoiced based on milestones, not hourly.
Yeah.
And then we also included the 15% contingency in there as well.
All right. Okay. Well, that's my message anyway. But any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, we have a two-prong motion as has been recited. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motions are passed unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners.
Next item on the agenda is the new railroad tamper purchase. And I don't know if you want to kick that off, Eric, or not.
I can. We've got Joe Caldwell and Pat Patterson from our, Pat's the director of facilities maintenance. Joe Caldwell's a project manager in maintenance. We're coming back. By the end of this, you're going to be experts on railroad tamper equipment. And Mr. Patterson just got back. Are you jet lagged or are you okay?
I'm on 26 hours.
Wow.
No sleep.
Okay, so
I'm ready to go.
Be a little bit kind to Pat because he just got off a long airplane ride.
Yeah.
But I'll turn it over to, I don't know which is going to lead it off, if it's going to be Joe or Pat.
Thank you.
Hello, commissioners. Joe Caldwell, project manager maintenance. I'm with Pat Patterson, director.
Hold the mic in closer, Joe.
Facilities. Thank you. So we were here a couple of months ago. We're back. So next slide. Nope.
It's right.
Please, thank you. Thank you. All right. So we're back for to request authorization for the additional $1 million for a total amount of $1.5 million for the purchase of the railroad track tamper, project ID 101712.01. As we spoke about this last time, our current tamper is on its last leg. It's almost died earlier this year. It's basically all the parts and everything's obsolete. So it does definitely need it to be replaced, and it's at the end of its life. So this is a background that we reviewed last time also. Managed jacks are used to lift tracks. Those managed jacks are heavy, and guys, they lift it to the site. So those are potential safety hazards. Of course, track maintenance is essential for our business. And we also need a new tamper to meet our FRA regulations and to keep up with our aging tracks. So we were approved $500,000 at the March 18th meeting, and we did some research prior to the meeting, found the tamp, the size of the rail engine that we needed for our needs. Most of the tampers out there are for railroad lines that do hundreds of miles of track, so they need these fast, efficient, complicated machines, and we were trying to look for something more simpler. And so we found a 3300 that fit our needs. So that's and there is one out there right now in service owned by the BNSF, and it's not productive for them. But it was something that we fit our needs, so that's why we chose to go that route. And then after we went out to bid and thoroughly interviewed the company, they misled us, and there was this would have been their first tamper that they were going to
retrofit.
Yeah, that's a good word. And therefore, we backed out and didn't feel comfortable with that decision. So we're now we're looking for a model like this that has. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles of a railroad line tamper, but this one would fit our needs. So the project details, we would, if approved, we would like to complete our specs by the end of this week, go out to bid by the 29th, and then receive the equipment by the end of the year. And we had allocated $1.5 million in the CIP, and project costs would be capitalized for 25 years, and resulting in an annual depreciation of $60,000 per year. The net value of the current railroad tamper is $0. And this is the financial summary. Cost to date is at zero right now. We just went out to bid. We haven't spent any of the $500,000 that was approved previously. The alternatives is, of course, do nothing and wait until our current tamper fails or purchase a new tamper. And the recommended course is, of course, alternative number two. And that is it. Questions?
Well, let me first get a motion to approve the project authorization in the amount of $1 million, which is in addition to the $500,000 we previously authorized for the purchase of a railroad track tamper. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
I'll second it.
Moved by Commissioner Ng, seconded by Commissioner Meyer. Questions, comments, or amendments? Commissioner Meyer.
Yes, thank you. I think there is another alternative. And that other alternative is that considering the cost of this particular machine, there is another, I'm assuming there's another tamper in the Tide Flats owned by Tacoma Rail. And I think I raised this question before was, why can't we just coordinate between the two? Because I'm assuming that this machine is not used every day.
You're correct, Commissioner. It's not a machine used every day. It would be used a lot more often than it has been in the past, just because it'll be a more reliable piece of equipment. It'll sustain some of the life of our tracks. One of the major issues of sharing a tamper, I'll just use that word, is it's a jurisdictional piece of equipment. We would not be able to operate on our timeline. We would have to coordinate with their timeline and their schedules, which might not line up very well. The other problem is they would not allow us to operate their piece of equipment as well for their labor issue. So we have a little labor dispute on whose work that would belong to. And it's our Port of Tacoma Local 22's work. So we want to maintain that work to our satisfaction and our standard. And the only way to really control that is to have our own piece of equipment and work on our timeline and not necessarily theirs. Mm-hmm. We did pursue that, just so you know, that was one of the things we started to work on, is can we get some kind of interlocal agreement or some kind of partnership, but it just didn't seem to work out at the higher levels of management to be able to back off the request of who's going to operate this piece of equipment. They bought it, they're going to run it. We don't want them doing work on our tracks and vice versa. They don't want us operating their equipment that they spent a lot of money for it too. If it breaks when we're using it, are we on the hook for that? So there just was a lot of flags on that cooperation. But just so you know, we tried to go that route initially, even before we went after the first proposal with the hybrid tamper we were trying to build.
Okay. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
No problem.
I'm going to follow up on that question, because to go from 500,000 to 1.5 million, It kind of begged the question for me is, can you rent these things? Are there other potential folks you can rent them from, UP, BN? And then the additional question, Commissioner Meyer, How many days a year do you actually use this, would you say?
Well, it's hard to say how many days. I can tell you we used it to, the tamper that we've had is broken down, or as makeshift as it was, we used it probably to 10% of its capacity. So it's hard to necessarily say how many days a year we would use it, but I can tell you that we can do a lot more work now with our own. That's a new one that's going to minimize some of the other maintenance issues that we run into by not using the tamper as frequently as we want. Having our tamper, current tamper, in the state that it is now, it really hamstrings the crew to get out on operational days where it's slow or where the best timing is to get out there. Some of these lead tracks that we have are carrying a lot of the oil trains, so there's a potential of accidents and derailments if we're not maintaining these tracks to a certain standard, and we haven't been able to do that with our current equipment. So I can't give you this. It's going to be used for 200 days out of the 365 of the year, but what I can tell you is that piece of equipment will be utilized to its full potential, and we haven't been able to do that in the 9 years I've been here.
Yeah. And the equipment is used to lift the tracks, as I understand it. So how many miles of track do we have now as opposed to the railroads or?
We have about 70-plus miles.
Yeah. In terms of rental, have you looked into?
They're not out there. Yeah, it's just not a piece of equipment that's just sitting around at Bunk's Rental or Rail Yard. I'm just using it as a name, but Rail Yard Rental Company. That's not a piece of equipment that's just sitting out there that you can just go rent. And plus, remember, you got to transport it to some kind of way. It has to get out here if that was even an option. So just to get it on a truck or however it got here to get on the tracks would be kind of challenging.
Yeah. In general, I mean, owning equipment just because our folks do the maintenance on it is not particularly persuasive. If there's a more reasonable means of getting a piece of equipment, so that's why I'm curious as to what our options are there. Any additional questions or comments? Commissioner Rosano.
Yeah, just a quick comment. And Pat, you mentioned it a little bit. I think one derailment can cost us a lot of money, a lot of job loss and everything like that. And I think this is money well spent. It also relieves some of the backs that may go out when we do this manually. I've seen some of the workers out there, and it's not an easy job, that's for sure. So.
No, compared to this piece of equipment to how we choose to lift the tracks now, it's night and day. It's all automated now. It's laser precise. There's no human element in that as far as doing anything wrong to cause any type of injury. So yeah, it's definitely a more productive way of doing that type of work, more efficient.
Right.
So, and again, I think the biggest thing that I want the commission to understand is we've been lacking in that service level of maintenance for those tracks for a long time. This tamper was in the 40s or 50s, whatever, however years ago it was. We have Strad engines in it. Our equipment maintenance staff have been putting timeless hours, just the hours that they've used to put into keeping our current tamper maintained is pretty much half of this cost over the last 10, 15 years anyway. So we should see return on our investment over time with this piece of equipment for sure.
Thank you.
Any additional questions or comments? Commissioner Ray.
I'm for this, but I just want us to get a really good one so you don't have to spend time on maintenance and on any delays. So if we are buying new, which I actually like the whole point about buying new, so that we don't waste any more time and that we actually do maintain our rails and keep our operations running smoothly. So I am for this rather than getting something used that doesn't work and we keep on trying to fix it and we spend so much time, we should spend time on our operations. So I fully support this.
Yeah, and this is just another carrot in our hat as far as the gateway. Our CEO, Jeff Bellarude, has recently just told us how attractive our gateway is to a lot of our customers, a lot more than some of the other gateways across the country. This is just another tool in our toolbox now to provide confidence to our customers that, you know, if you got product to bring in here or out of here, we can handle it at a high level and continue to deliver high level service.
I will say, Commissioner Hank, to your credit, when this came up last time, the idea of buying the used one, you were the one that suggested, what about buying a new one? And so I think you were right on point there.
I want us to live up to, what was it? The number one West Coast operations? I don't know who sent that in. One of you sent that in, but I'm glad we won that.
Okay. Any additional questions or comment? Okay. Although it's in favor of the motion to approve the new railroad tamper purchase, please say aye.
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 Is there any opposition? The ayes have it. It passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is Silverback lease. This is the second reading. We had a first reading at our last meeting. The second meeting is when the lease will be considered for approval. Einar Roden.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. This is Silverback Industries second reading. I'm Einar Roden, Senior Manager, Real Estate and Business Development. The authorization request I'm making today is for the Executive Director or his designee to enter into a new four-year lease with Silverback Industries for premises including 401 East Alexander Avenue, a metal warehouse with 12,000 square feet and 1 acre of yard area. And background, Silverback specializes in building military landing crafts, skiffs, towboats, and workboats. Commissioner Marzano, you had asked about the book of business last time I was here. Their book of business is going strong. They're getting a lot of contract offers. They're still working on one with the U.S. Coast Guard, so they have a favorable outlook for their business. They plan on expanding. They've been a tenant at the EBC since 2021. They employ six people full-time, so we have six full-time jobs. The current lease building is scheduled for demolition, and Silverback is going to contribute $750,000 toward the temporary building. The total building cost, Commissioner Keller had asked me last time, was $3.5 million. So this is a significant investment on their part toward the total building cost. The new lease terms and rent reflect Silverback's contribution. Here we're looking at an aerial map showing the location. You'll see it's at the tip of the EBC between the Blair and the Hylabos waterways, just at the very tip of the peninsula there. Here we're looking at a footprint. So the blue area is the 12,000 square foot temporary metal structure. The green area is the 1 acre of surrounding yard area. The use will be for construction and storage of aluminum boats. The commencement date will be upon the completion of the new building, which is estimated to be September 1st, 2026. The lease term will be 4 years with potential extension by mutual agreement. And the monthly rent is $2,000 per month plus leasehold excise tax. Rent escalations will be adjusted annually based on the CPI index. The security deposit is 3 months rent, which is a variance from our 12 months rent standard policy. That's justified because of the large $750,000 contribution they're making for their own building. So we factored that in. And additional information, the tenant financial contribution is fully refundable if we don't build the building. So if we don't deliver, then they get that deposit back. We have two alternatives. Alternative number one is we can move forward with this project as proposed, construct the new temporary structure. This will enable the relocation of Silverback. The other alternative is we don't build the building and we risk losing Silverback as a tenant. I recommend option number one. And once again, the request is for the executive director or his designee to enter into a new four-year lease with Silverback Industries for the premises located 401 East Alexander Avenue in Tacoma. including a 12,000-square-foot pre-engineered metal warehouse and 1 acre of land. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
All right. This being the second reading, I'll put it on the table and ask if there's a motion to authorize the executive director to enter into a new four-year lease with Silverback Industries, including the pre-engineered metal warehouse and 1 acre of yard area. Is there such a motion?
So move.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Marzano, seconded by Commissioner Keller. Questions, comments, or amendments?
I have a question.
Commissioner Keller.
Yes.
Thank you. Einar, thank you so much for this presentation and all the work that you've done on this. Can you give me an idea about the life expectancy of this temporary facility?
Well, we know that the city is going to cooperate with us to let it stay in place for about 4 or 5 years. They didn't give us a direct total number, but they said they could be flexible to that extent. At some point, a temporary building is no longer temporary. It's a permanent building. And so at that juncture, we may have to invest more capital to improve the building and or move it to another location. But I think we're good for at least the first 4 or 5 years, and then we can move it to another location, maybe do some enhancements to it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Other questions?
Just a follow up real quickly. I understand with the Tacoma, but the metal building itself has a lifespan of?
Maybe 15 to 20 years,
okay,
something like
you.
That.
Yeah.
Commissioner Meyer.
Yes, thank you. Couple of questions. Are there any promises beyond this four-year agreement?
There are none.
Okay. This is now, they're currently in, what did you say, 12,000 square feet?
They're currently in building 407. They kind of have part of that building and they have a trailer outside. But yeah, this will be 12,000 square feet, which is a slight increase to what they're leasing now.
Okay. And do they plan on adding additional staffing?
They're hoping that they're going to grow their business, but at this point 12,000 square feet would be sufficient to meet their needs, and so this works for what their current plan is, but they are planning on growing.
I think, and that's fantastic, because I think Commissioner Marzano is always asking about jobs and the importance of that to the community. But one of the things, I guess maybe this is more aimed at Eric, you know, I keep reading about the fact that we want to do shipbuilding in this country. Yeah. And I'm thinking the early business center, folks, is more than just a four-year temporary facility. And I know you know that. And we've had a long conversation about what's the master plan and the ability to basically take advantage of shipbuilding here in the Tacoma Tide Flats. And is that just a discussion for some other areas of our country, or is that a discussion here for us in Tacoma to say, can we get aggressive? Can we really, you know, is that really a true program? And is there a way that we can leverage what we want to do? Because one of the things that I've been frustrated about the Early Business Center is I don't think we have adequate water access. If you really want to look at the development of this program, it's water access. So is there a strategy associated with shipbuilding here in Commencement Bay?
Commissioner Meyer, very good question. My personal opinion is yes. I think there is a future for maritime manufacturing in Tacoma, and particularly at the EBC. You've been through a number of presentations where we've presented to you the challenges that we face out there, the old buildings, the contamination that goes underneath of it. But I believe I'm bullish on that property. And I've mentioned to some of you that I think it's time for us to consider looking for a partner to work with us in that space, because I think it makes some sense. I don't have any more meat to put on the bones of that concept yet, but you know, you've been clear, you the commission have been clear, that you want water-dependent manufacturing out there. I think that's a good idea. And it also dovetails very nicely with the investments that we're making in the Maritime Center and the Skills Center with the Tacoma School District and the Maritime Skills Center. They crosswalk perfectly. So if we can create the jobs that we're training on one side of the bay, mm-hmm. that we're training them for on the other side of the bay, that's a pretty good plan. The question is, can we find the infrastructure investment? You know, you saw the numbers earlier on a couple of years ago about how expensive it is to put in that kind of infrastructure out there. Much more money than we were originally thinking it was going to be. So we paused it based on nothing more than the size of the investment that was needed. But If we can look for an investor that will help us out in return for a long-term lease, I think that makes some sense. So I'm planning to bring forward something that's a little bit more detailed than what I just got done telling you. But I think that we have a nascent vision for our longer-term manufacturing facility out there.
Good.
You know, we've let that depreciation go on too long, in my opinion. There's different reasons for that. But it was built in, you know, it's a 70, 80-year-old campus. The Navy built it, before World War II. And we've been making pretty good use of it, but its time has come for those buildings.
I guess my final comment would be is that I want to make certain in your communications with Silverback a sincere appreciation for their investment mm-hmm. and a sincere appreciation for their involvement here in the Tacoma Tide Flats and with the Port of Tacoma. I think we all look forward to a good relationship. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Did you have something?
No, I'm sorry, did you have any other questions?
That's what I was going to ask.
Any additional questions?
All right, seeing none, we have the motion before us. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 7 on the agenda is the special order of business. There is none that has been scheduled. Item number 8 is new business. Do any commissioners have a non-action new business item that they'd like to discuss or move forward to an action item to the next meeting? I'm seeing no hands. Item number 9 is committee reports. I think I see none slated. We do have...
Commissioner McCarthy.
Commissioner Meyer.
Yes, although it's not a committee, I do want to let my fellow commissioners know that I'm serving as a port representative on the Pierce County Flood Control District. And one of the items as a follow-up to our meeting with Pierce County Council was a suggestion by Council Member Morrell. He had some ideas. But one of the ideas that I'm an advocate for, and Council Member Morrell seems to be supportive of it, is the idea that we would allocate through the Flood Control District, not Port of Tacoma money, but the property tax that they collect, $1 million towards the planning in terms of the overall Puyallup River levee situation. And it's really a follow-up from a Army Corps of Engineering study that occurred back in March of 2016. And so I just want to make certain everybody's on board of my advocacy. It's not really a committee, it's just mainly I'm acting as a port representative, and I'm advocating something, and I don't want anybody to be surprised. I think you all should have received a letter that basically was an invite from the administrator of the Pierce County Control Flood District. You should have received it in your package. I'm hoping that, Eric, through your cooperation and my involvement on that group, that we can get behind and support planning for the lower Puyallup River focus area. A lot of things have changed since 2016. When I look at what the county has out there as property holding, what the port intends to do overall, and what the Puyallup tribe perhaps would like to have happen. And so I just want to make certain my advocacy is not a surprise to each and every one of you. If you want any more information, I'd be happy to provide it as we go through. The budget hasn't been approved yet, but I'm advocating $1 million to be set aside. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to issue briefings then, I think we have a scheduled briefing on the Clean Air Implementation Plan update. And I think Steve Nicholas, as well as Ms. Rettmeyer, are going to present on it. Did I pronounce that correct?
I think so. Thank you, President McCarthy and Commissioners. Steve Nicholas, Senior Manager for Air Quality and Sustainable Practices for the Port of Tacoma, joined by my colleague Megan Rechmeyer. Megan is centrally involved in the work that we're going to update you on and get your guidance on today. Happy to have her with me. See if I can remember how to use this. Yes, okay. So
We are here today to give you a briefing on the process that we're engaged in to update the Port of Tacoma's five-year clean air implementation plan, and kind of give you a quick update on the Northwest Port's clean air strategy that implementation plan is focused on advancing. We also want to give you a sense of the process we're following, the draft content that's emerging, and the external stakeholder engagement that we're doing to inform the development of that update. And then, of course, we want to get your feedback and your direction on next steps. By way of reminder, thank you very much. Rarely accused of being too soft-spoken. As a reminder, the Northwest Port's Clean Air Strategy, that is the collaborative framework for clean air and climate action across four port entities, ports of Seattle and Tacoma, plus the Alliance, plus the Vancouver Fraser Port Authority in Upper British Columbia. We went through a very intensive process of updating that strategy back in 2020, and that culminated in the unanimous adoption of that update by both home port commissions and the managing members of the Alliance in April of 2021. And it was in that update that we collectively embraced the vision of phasing out all seaport related, all emissions from all seaport related activities by 2050. You can see there, by way of reminder, the breakdown of the seaport related emissions across the three port entities in our region. That's the two home ports and the Northwest Seaport Alliance. And I just want to make a couple of points about this graphic because I think they're important. One is that you can see quickly that the slice of the emissions, the percentage of the emissions profile for which the Port of Tacoma has direct responsibility is quite small, in the neighborhood of 2%, but still significant, and still part of our goal of getting to net zero by 2050 or sooner. You can also see that the majority of the emissions, whether you're thinking about diesel particulate matter or greenhouse gases, are associated with the cargo operations, and therefore, of course, are the primary responsibility of the Northwest Seaport Alliance. But as you know very well, the Port of Tacoma plays a central role in working with the Alliance to drive down and ultimately eliminate those emissions, especially those that occur in the Tacoma Harbor. So once update to the Northwest Ports Clean Air Strategy was adopted, we pivoted quickly to the development of five-year implementation plans. Each of the port entities did this, including the Port of Tacoma. And so that's the place where, you will recall, we sort of lay out quite a bit more detail in terms of the specific actions that we're going to take and the specific performance metrics that we're going to use to gauge our progress over time for that five-year period. That is the document that we are currently in the process of updating, because the current plan is 2021 to 2025. So, we're nearing the end of 2025. So the work that we're presenting today and getting your feedback on is around creating that an update to this plan. That'll be the 2026 to 2030 iteration of the Port's Clean Air Implementation Plan. And these are just some of the factors that we're taking into account, you know, as we do that. And I won't read all of these, but a couple of highlights. Of course, things are evolving rapidly, the policy landscape, the funding landscape, the technology landscape. One notable example of that as it relates to the Port of Tacoma is the Washington State's relatively new Clean Buildings Performance Standard. So the port will need to, that's requiring all of the commercial buildings in the state to meet energy performance standards, and so we've got work underway, as we'll talk about a little bit more in a moment, to ensure that the port is going to be in compliance with that standard. And you can see some of the other factors, including, of course, your direction and external stakeholder feedback that we're taking into account as we develop this update. Before we pivot to the draft, to what's emerging as the draft content for the update, I did want to pause for a moment to highlight some of the progress that we've made in the current five-year implementation period. I think it's fair to say that we're making good, solid progress that we can all feel, I think, you know, really good about. We're at about an 85% success rate when you look at the 18 milestones that are embedded in the current five-year clean air implementation plan for the port. By the end of this year, we anticipate that we will have implemented about 15 of those. So, pretty good progress. And these are some of the highlights in terms of the accomplishments that we, and this is very much the collective we, have had over the course of the last 5 years. Again, I'm not going to read the slide, but I'll point out a couple of highlights: making good progress in terms of transitioning to LED lighting,
both out in the on the terminals and in the rail yards, as well as in buildings. A lot of really good progress on the port's vehicle fleet, and of course all the credit for this goes to the maintenance team. But we've been, as you know, installing EV charging infrastructure, beginning with the port administration building and also including the new port maritime center. And as that infrastructure gets into place, the maintenance team is beginning to purchase EVs for the port's vehicle fleet. Also purchased an electric yard tractor fairly recently for the port-owned CHE fleet. And very notably, the port switched to renewable diesel several months ago, maybe close to a year ago, for in all of the port-owned diesel vehicles and equipment. Very substantial emission reductions associated with that. And a great example of leadership by example by the port, because one thing we've seen since the port made that decision is many of our operating partners, including a couple of our large cargo terminals, have followed suit, including Husky Terminal and more recently SSA. So those are just some of the highlights in terms of the, and I think the bottom line is that I think there's a lot to be proud of, and I kudos to the commission for its leadership, to Executive Director Johnson and his leadership team, and then of course to staff around the port, in particular the maintenance team and the engineering team. So now pivoting to some of the draft content that's emerging for this update, and there's a lot of detail that's emerging that we don't have time today to get into. The memo and the attachment that we provided, there's a lot more detail in there. I think what Megan and I want to do today, in the interest of time, is just give kind of hit some of the highlights in each of the different emission reduction arenas, give you a flavor for what's in there, and again, of course, get your guidance. So starting with port-owned facilities. So port-owned facilities account for about 25% of the so-called Scope 1 and 2 greenhouse gas emissions that the port has responsibility for. As a reminder, those are the Scope 1 and Scope 2 is a fancy way of saying the emissions over which we have the most direct control. So those are the emissions that are associated with the port's own facilities and the port's own vehicle fleets. And the facilities, as I just mentioned, are about 25% of that. So you can see some of the actions that we're contemplating over the course of the next 5 years. Again, I won't read the slide, but a few highlights. I mentioned earlier, there is and will continue to be a pretty big effort to ensure that we're in compliance with, that the port is in compliance with the Washington Clean Buildings Performance Standards. We're in the process of doing a fairly comprehensive inventory of the port's energy portfolio and looking at current energy use and trying to figure out which of the port-owned buildings are going to be subject to compliance and what is going to have to be done at those buildings to ensure that they are in compliance. We'll continue, of course, to do LED lighting upgrades with the goal of having nothing but LED lights on port facilities by the end of 2030. And then another thing I want to highlight is when you look at the port's emissions profile, a lot of the greenhouse gas emissions that the port does have responsibility for are related to natural gas use, either in port buildings, either buildings that the port is owning and operating, or buildings that the port owns but that are operated by tenants. And so to achieve our goal of net zero Scope 1 and 2 emissions by 2040, we are going to need to begin to transition away from fossil natural gas use in port buildings toward electrification, or in some cases purchasing renewable natural gas for those buildings. Pivoting now to the port-owned fleet. So this is a fleet of roughly 150-ish vehicles and equipment. So this is everything from the passenger vehicles and light duty vehicles that are used by the maintenance crew, by the security, but for administrative purposes. Also includes forklifts and other machinery, including the railway tamper that was just discussed, that are owned and operated by the port. This is a bigger chunk of our emissions profile for Scope 1 and Scope 2, more in the neighborhood of 75%. Of the Scope 1 and 2 emissions are associated with this fleet. As I mentioned, a lot of good progress has been made, and these are some of the actions that we're contemplating for the next 5 years. I'll hit again a couple of the highlights. We have to continue the process of building strategic locations, EV charging infrastructure. You all know that that will be happening at the Newport Maritime Center. I believe EB1 is the next location, and possibly some additional charging will be necessary at the existing port admin building, depending on where the security fleet ends up. So we'll continue to push there. We will also continue to work on transitioning that small fleet of equipment, that including the forklifts that are owned and operated by the port, transitioning those to zero emission pieces of equipment, and then continuing, as I mentioned earlier, continuing to use that renewable diesel in the interim is going to be important. Next is the grain terminal. The grain terminal operated by TEMCO, and again, a reminder, we're talking about a very small slice of the overall seaport-related emissions in the gateway. But when you look at that 2% that the port is more directly responsible for, a lot of those are occurring at the grain terminal. In fact, it's close to 100% of the diesel particulate matter in our emissions profile is at the terminal, from the cargo, from the grain ships, from the tugboats that are assisting the grain ships in and out of the grain terminal, and then the switcher locomotives that are servicing that terminal. And so we think it's a good time in the context of updating this implementation plan to kind of up our game in terms of working with TEMCO. They're a great tenant, they're a great partner, and we think there's a lot of opportunity to continue to work with them and to deepen our relationship with them and look for ways to drive down these emissions. Renewable diesel, for example, as I talked about, could be a relatively easy way to bring about some significant reductions there if we were able to work with them to shift the two or three switcher locomotives that are there to renewable diesel, that's as an example. So we are proposing to work with them to develop kind of a mini action agenda around the emissions profile there at the grain terminal. This one we're really excited about, but it's got kind of a clunky name and it's a little hard to describe. So think about that title as just a working title. But the basic idea here is that, as you well know, we are not the only industrial operation on and near the tide flats. There are a number of other industries that are in operation on the tide flats or near the tide flats. Some of them are port tenants, some of them are not. A lot of those industrial entities, like the port, are constantly looking for ways to increase their operational efficiency, to reduce waste, and to reduce emissions. And so we sense that there could be, if we look for them, some opportunities to partner more closely with some of the other industrial entities on or near the tide flats to do resource sharing, or to look for ways for one entity's waste or output to be another entity's input. For example, there's a port in Denmark where they are using the sand that they're dredging at the port in a nearby cement production facility. That particular example is probably not relevant to us, but it gives you a sense of the kinds of things that can, that can happen if you're intentional and you go looking for them. You'll hear this described as circular economy. You'll hear it described as industrial symbiosis. But that's kind of what we're talking about. And so we would like to. And another facet of this is the possibility of being more intentional about looking at port properties as they become available and whether there's a way to find tenants for those properties that would both create revenue, pay rent, but also advance our clean air and climate goals. So think about something like battery energy storage, or clean fuel production or storage, or charging or fueling for zero-emission drayage trucks, that kind of thing. So again, we don't know where that all will land, but the proposal is that we just get more intentional about looking at those kinds of possibilities as part of this clean air implementation plan update. Finally, before we talk about external engagement a little bit, I mentioned earlier that the vast majority of emissions that the Northwest Ports Clean Air Strategy is seeking to phase out by 2050 are the primary responsibility of the Northwest Seaport Alliance, 90%. But I also mentioned, and I know you know, that the Port of Tacoma plays a really important role in partnering with the Alliance to drive those emissions down, especially those that occur in the South Harbor. So the Clean Air Implementation Plan, as the current one does, will also feature some of the collaborative actions that the port takes with the Alliance to drive down those emissions. This is a busy slide. I'm not going to try to read it, but I want to point out a couple of these that I think are particularly interesting and that you and that we'd like to hear from you on. I mentioned this one already, but we do sense that there may be an opportunity to install zero-emission truck charging and fueling on certain port properties as they become available. That's something we want to, again, working with the real estate team, of course, be more intentional about exploring. The other one down there on the bottom right is exploring opportunities related to the increased use of LNG as a maritime fuel globally. We understand this is a controversial topic. We understand there's a lot of history here. But we think that we would be remiss as your air quality and sustainable practices team if we didn't at least raise this issue as part of this implementation plan update, because what we're seeing happening in reality is a dramatically increased use of LNG as a maritime fuel. About 650, 700 vessels already on the water globally. That's expected to double by the end of the decade. A lot of ocean carriers, I would say most of the major ocean carriers, including many that are calling on our terminals in Seattle and Tacoma, are moving in this direction, at least as an interim solution. And they're doing that because it's a cleaner fuel than conventional ship fuels, 80% to 90% reduction in diesel particulate matter and sulfur and sulfur dioxides. That's not disputed. On the greenhouse gas emissions side, 20 to 30% reduction, that is disputed. Natural gas is mostly methane. Methane escapes or slips during production and during transportation, and methane has a very high, what's called the global warming potential, meaning it's a very potent greenhouse gas, and so there are differences of opinion about the greenhouse gas emissions benefits over time associated with LNG use. But there also is a lot of work going on to limit that methane slip and to increase the greenhouse gas emissions benefit of LNG. And there also is a lot of work going on in terms of how to move from LNG to renewable natural gas or synthetic natural gas, which is what I think a lot of the ocean carriers that are investing in the new builds that are LNG capable are thinking that's the direction that they're going. So, and speaking of new builds, about 30, 35, 36% of the ships being built right now globally are LNG capable. And so, It's indisputable, I think, that there is and will be increased use of LNG by ocean-going vessels over the course of the next decade. They're able to meet IMO regulations with LNG for at least the next decade. So just wanted to mention that because we, of course, do have an LNG facility on the tide flaps that's currently underutilized. So that's a little bit on the draft content, just a couple more quick slides. External engagement, of course, we want to take this opportunity to have conversations with our external stakeholders. This is everyone from our customers, our tenants, our operating partners, all the way through to our near port communities, NGOs that are active in the clean air and climate space, and of course some tribes and other government entities. So we are in the process of having consultations about this draft update with all of the organizations that you see listed there. And then finally, the timeline is it. We're right in the middle of it. We are going to be pivoting from this conversation with you and the guidance that we're hoping to get from you now, and then the consultations that we're having with the external stakeholders will then pivot quickly to writing a draft, coming back to you with that, and we're hoping to bring it to you for adoption before the end of the calendar year.
Okay, are you ready for questions or comments? Or is there more to the presentation?
Sorry?
Are you ready for questions?
Yes, of course.
All right. Yeah. Commissioner Keller.
Great. Oh, sorry. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. First of all, Steve, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I know that the times that I've talked with Chrissy Cooley with Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, she considers you an expert, and we're really excited and happy that you're, on the staff and
I
the work
at least
that
one
our
person.
Yes, and you're doing great work. Can we go back to the slide that talks about the highlights, 2021 to 2025? And I think what's important about this is that I've been a commissioner now for 5.5 years, and sometimes it's frustrating for me. I feel like government works very slowly. But what we've done with clean air strategy And with the work of the team, our environmental team, is that we have actually done a lot in 5 years. I mean, it's been amazing, especially when you consider COVID within that. The amount of money that it takes that we've also been able to get from our state legislators, our Pierce County delegation, as well as our Washington State delegation in Washington, D.C., has been helpful too. But it's taken an incredible amount of money, an incredible amount of work, and a lot of partnership with a lot of different agencies. And I think it really struck home to me when we went to Husky Terminal and had the celebration of the shore power and seeing how many stakeholders were there wanting to see that, because everybody has been gunning for that. And so we're doing our work. We're doing it as quickly as we can. Again, it's expensive, hard work, but it's important to us. And I know that this commission is very dedicated, and the staff is very dedicated to that. So thank you for all your work. Really appreciate it.
Commissioner Marzano.
Yeah, just a couple of comments. First of all, I concur with Commissioner Keller with regards to the work that you all do. It's really important. One of the things that I think is important to mention when you give these briefings, this is just an idea or a thought, is some of the things we've already accomplished, meaning the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, diesel particulate matter. I think that shows that we've been moving in the right direction. We've been investing in the right things. I think that's a good story to tell. So when we're moving forward and telling about what we want to do in the future, this is because of some of the history and what we've done. Another thing you mentioned that's going to be kind of hard to swallow, but I think we're going to swallow this for at least the next 3.5 years, is we have an administration that doesn't believe we have a climate problem. And with that goes grant opportunities for things that we're going to do. So I think we need to be realistic what that cost is going to be as we move forward, fully understanding we're still going to move forward, but it's not going to be as with a partnership with an administration that doesn't believe in this. So just wanted to get that out there.
Commissioner Ryan.
First of all, thank you for the presentation, Steve, and thank you for the team for these past years that we've all been here and all the successes. And I guess for me, taking a look at this, and you talked about the grain terminal, and I was thinking about with other ports that do have in their leases about sustainability terms and collaboration, that they already put the performance within the lease, and I know that certain leases are coming up. That's just my comment, and to take a look at that. And then with the renewable diesel, I am kind of curious about the supply. Is it still comparable cost to regular diesel at this point with our legislation and policy? And I guess the availability of renewable diesel. I know we gave an award last year to PetroCard Environmental for the Northwest Seaport Alliance. I was curious about availability. How much are we actually using for our cargo equipment? And then how much is our whole gateway using in terms of renewable diesel, since it is a drop in fuel? And I believe you once said, at least in the report, that it takes about 60 to 75% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, 20 to about 30% in diesel particulates. So it's right away an interim solution. But I'm curious about how much do we actually use and how much is available.
Yeah, those are really good questions. I think you're correct about the emission reduction benefits, give or take. Depends a little bit on exactly how the renewable diesel is produced, obviously. But they are significant benefits. It is considered, a so-called drop-in fuel, meaning a truck, for example, could pull up to a pump and put renewable diesel in its tank without any changes to the truck or concerns about the operation of the truck.
Would that work for school buses too? I'm just curious.
I believe so, but I'm not sure. We can check into that. We can also check. I don't know the volumes that we're using. Megan May. We can certainly get that. And then we also have the sense that it's become quite a bit more readily available supply wise, and that the price point is still at, if not even a little bit below, fossil diesel. But things are changing rapidly, and we actually are just on the verge of a procurement to hire in a consultant with expertise in this arena, who's going to do a really deep analysis of us, analysis for us of exactly that, in Washington State. What are the available supplies, now and out into the future? What are the price points? We also want to look at, for example, where our drayage truckers are fueling and maybe develop relationships with those fueling entities, be it Love's or wherever, and have a conversation with them. But because with the drayage truckers, they don't really, you know, they're not going to probably go looking for renewable diesel, but if renewable diesel is available where they're already fueling their trucks, then it could be a fairly easy and inexpensive, if not even cost-saving option for them. So anything to add, Megan?
Yeah. One of the comments I did want to take about the EV structures and our real estate is that usually we'd want these particular facilities where it makes sense in terms of the truckers, not because maybe some people's real estate, whether north or south, has some issues of being usable and, you know, rent-wise. I want it actually, if we're really thinking about the real estate in our portfolios in both north and south, it's because it actually makes sense, not in a way to subsidize our real estate because we can't seem to do anything with it. That's what I'm taking a look at. If we are going to take a look at real estate from both harbors. Yes. That's just my concern, that it actually has a criteria and it makes sense for the overall operations for the state, international, when we take a look at real estate. Because Port of Tacoma, we have no issue in terms of like leasing our real estate and the viability of these things. Yeah. And then the other one on some of the suggestions, I would say that the Port of Tacoma is a trusted environmental leader. And when we looked at that event at the Shore Power, we had a lot of support from our community and lots of buy-in. With a certain suggestion over there, you might lose that unity. And losing that unity, you would affect all your other projects. So I would very tread carefully before you proceed into new territories or expansions, because you will have to use your social credit and all your trust to lead in a certain way. And you have to make sure you have all your math, you have everything. Otherwise, you will lose what we've built over these last, I don't know, whatever times you've done this implementation, 5 years. We just have to be that sure, because it's easy to lose. It's hard to build. You guys have built it through the mitigation project, Wapato, built it through the school, you've built it through all the Shore Power, but it's easy to lose all of that. Just for me, just to tell all of you about that, just to be very careful.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. I've got a question or comment. Go ahead, Commissioner Murphy.
Yeah, thank you. Commissioner Ng's reference to losing it in terms of a leadership issue kind of reminds me of a few days, at least two of the commissioners sitting on this dais here. Reminds me of the subject of LNG and the facility associated with building it here in Tacoma. And it really leads me to where you talk about collaborative actions and the comment about exploring opportunities related to increased use of LNG by the global ship fleet. When I read the literature, I'm always amazed at the dual powered vessels being built today. LNG is a big component of that. But one of the things that I've always been interested in and an advocate for is when people talk about LNG, there is such a thing as green LNG. Is there renewable LNG? I think there is. But where I live, in the community I live in, there is a former garbage dump called Hidden Valley Landfill. It's about maybe 2 miles, 2.5 miles to the main line, the Williams natural gas pipeline. Now, I don't know, is methane compatible to inserting it into the natural gas process? And, you know, would the source of gas from a garbage dump be considered green or I don't know about renewable, but my point here is that I think from my standpoint, we took a lot of heat building and advocating and approving an LNG facility in this community. But I don't think the conversation should stop. And I guess I would like to convey, when you say partnerships, my only point is being a partner with PSE to look around for the resources associated with green LNG or renewable LNG. I don't know what that is, I don't know what that means, but I can assure you that when we think about the global ship fleet, and by the way, we're, although this is through the Northwest Seaport Alliance in terms of green corridors and a variety of other things, but this is a topic that I'm vitally interested in, and I believe more can be done. We need to understand where PSC is going. Now, maybe that's proprietary information, but when you talk about collaborative actions, that was one action, in my mind, is paramount. Because I think the dividends that, that the facility that we advocated for and was eventually built by them can be turned into something as a real asset that that really helps lead relative to cutting back on some really significant emissions by our shipping fleet. So, just a comment. I don't know whether or not, you know, every time I go to the dump, which is not very frequent, but there's a huge column, it's burning directly into the air. You can't see it. You cannot see the flame that's going on, up, but it's huge. And the thought every time I go there is, wouldn't it be nice to be able to take that and put it into the Williams pipeline? And so those are the sorts of things. I'd like to know, is PSA looking at those sorts of things? And how can we help make that LNG facility more green? That's really, because I know when I look at the ship orders, it's dual fuel, and LNG is a big part of it.
Obviously, we could have an entire study session on just
I want to provide a
short answer to your question about the landfill gas. The answer to that is yes. So the primary sources of renewable natural gas are landfills, wastewater treatment plants, and dairy farms. And depending on the quality of that gas, as it gets as it goes into pipelines and gets mixed with the fossil natural gas, my understanding is that the dairy gas in particular gets you to below zero in terms of the net greenhouse gases. So I'm quite sure that, I don't want to speak for them, but I'm quite sure that PSC is looking at that because they have a corporate goal of getting to net zero emissions by, I think, 2045. So they're needing to meet their own corporate goals, they're needing to be heading in that direction with their natural gas supplies, including those on the pipeline. So. But I know a much longer conversation. I think the team felt that because of what's happening, you know, in the shipping industry globally, that it warranted bringing it to your attention.
Thank you.
Okay. This is your clean air briefing for the plan from 2026 to 2030. And I have a specific change that I'd like to see to your plan. And it has to do with the Tacoma Grain Terminal and TEMCO. And could you pull the slide up on that?
Yes.
Because as you point out, that is the largest source of greenhouse gas and DPM emissions associated within the port. It also happens to be perhaps the closest terminal to population and high school and a lot of other things. And so my suggestion is that your plan to collaborate by the end of 2027, that's not soon enough for me. That's a big issue. That's 2.5 years away. And I'd like to see a plan to collaborate at least a year sooner than that. It is the biggest source, and it's the one, and I recognize.
All right. That's TEPCO calling.
Apparently
not.
That's a 803 number, 700 number. It could be. I don't know who it is. But, and I'd also like to know exactly what we can do. How long is that lease? If I could have a memo or something. I don't know what's being done to collaborate, who we're reaching out to, but how long is that lease? What are the provisions in the lease with regard to anything of this nature? There may or may not be anything. And I also have questions as to what ability do we have to call upon other entities to review that. I'm not sure. If they're in compliance, with old standards, but I've just said this is my focus. This TEMCO is my focus. I really want to see an action plan. It's not 2.5 years from now. We hope they've met with us. you know, I really want to know more about that, what we can do. And I've heard about from the community about TEMCO, too. So that's my focus and my suggestion and the action plan, that would be more specific, and if there's a way you need to engage the commission on what needs to be done. But if you could review that and perhaps give me a little memo on that, that'd be helpful.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Keller.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I didn't see anything about this in your presentation, and I know where we're at with our current White House administration, but can you tell me what's going on with the hydrogen hub in the Pacific Northwest? I haven't heard anything about it most recently.
Yeah, I can give a quick answer, and then we can follow up with the details, because my teammate, Graham Vander Schellen, is our lead there, and so I'm not as close to it. I can say that it is still going on. Meetings are still occurring. The money has not yet been clawed back by the U.S. Department of Energy. But I think there's a fair amount of uncertainty around the future, as there is around just about any source of federal funding right now. And the additional complication there is the federal tax credits for hydrogen production are going away, and that's a big part of the puzzle, because the producers that are at that table have really been relying on the tax credits to make the production of clean hydrogen pencil out. So I think it's fair to say that it's still happening, and we're still hopeful, but there's a lot of uncertainty and concern about the future of that project.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further questions or comments, but thank you for the presentation. Next item on the agenda are announcements and commissioner comments. Mr. Johnson, did you have any additional announcements?
Only one, Mr. President, and that is that we have had or about to have two birthdays on the commission. Commissioner Marzano's birthday was about 2 weeks ago, and your birthday is about 2 weeks from now. And so I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday from all the staff. We will not sing, however.
Thank you. I almost forgot. So I mean, thank you. Commission comments. Mr. Marzano.
Yeah, just very quickly, Eric made a comment with regards to the NAACP dinner this Thursday. And Judy, if I'm not mistaken, there's still a couple seats left at our port table. Oh. So people out there,
okay.
You know, it's a great event. So just let's get cracking. Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, I think I saw your hand.
Thank you. What I would like to suggest, if it's possible, at our next commission meeting, to have a briefing and an update on the Maritime Center project. And I'm speaking of the business case. What I've been made aware of is some cost numbers associated with the upgrade of One Sitcom Way. And when we first got into this whole program about the relocation of the port's admin facility, it was on the basis that we could move staff from one facility to another. And then during this interim period, we seemed to kind of vacillate a little bit about how many people would actually transition into the new building. We also, I don't have clarity around the Northwest Seaport Alliance staff that's going to go there. We're in the process of ordering furniture. And I think what's important is I'd like to suggest we have an update on the business piece of our administration building for the Maritime Center. And I'd also like to suggest that we have a master plan presentation, to where the last time we talked about it in our work session, we had some options on the boot. And I think it would be important for us to select which option we want to throw our support behind. So I think it would be nice to have an updated master planning effort for our Maritime Center project, and then also a business discussion relative to staffing and the staffing changes between what's happening today in the existing admin place versus what we're going to do in the new building, and also to update us relative to the cost associated with the old building in terms of what investments we're going to make, because I've heard some numbers that were staggering. And I think we need to have a little more clarity about our business plan associated with the old building versus the new building and the concepts we originally had. So I'd like to suggest that as an issue briefing. Master plan, and then the business plan associated with the new building and the old, if that would be okay.
Additional commissioner comments? I have one. Our meeting with the county council, I think, was very successful, and that kind of came home to me when County Executive Ryan Mello contacted me the other day and would like to also spend some time with the commission. And I know I reached out to you, Eric. We haven't had a chance to talk about that, but potentially would like to have a work session meeting anyway with County Executive Mello. He would like to talk about some issues that interface with the port, if possible, at the next meeting. And as I say, not particularly elongated, maybe 20 to 30 minutes or something, if we can work that into the agenda. Like I say, I think our meeting with the council went well, and the county exec would like to discuss some issues with them. So if you could, we can talk about that further and see what we can do to set that aside. Any additional questions or comments? Seeing no hands, it's now 1:40, and with no further business before the commission, we will adjourn.